Hey everyone, I'm Mel Cheng and this is the She Dares podcast. She Dares is a community for women. We push each other through our daring mindsets to be brave and break out of our comfort zones. It's all too easy to get stuck on the treadmill of life and then you forget to have fun and learn new things. That's why we're here. We want to help each other continually improve our mindsets as well as having more fun in our lives. We have to create these opportunities for ourselves, but through the power of our community and an open network, more possibilities arise. Every week we get a new guest on the show to talk about their experiences when they push themselves to step into the unknown and reap the rewards. Today we're talking to Aurelia Albrecht. She's a visual designer based in Japan at the agency Huge. We talk about the goal from moving to Japan from Austria, the cultural differences and the difficulties she faced with gender bias and the pandemic being so far away from her friends and family, and how she stuck to her guns and never wavered from her original goal even though it was super tough. All right, she's ready, so let's get her on the show. All right, Aurelia. Hey, how are you?
I'm good. It's very good to see you. I'm excited.
It's so good to see you. It's been way too long. And now that travel is slowly opening, I'm hoping that I'll be able to come and see you.
Yes, please.
So, I mean, obviously you've been following She Dares for a bit and you know what we're doing on the show. We're getting inspiring women, and you are definitely one inspiring woman that I've been watching ever since I met you. Over the years, it's pretty cool. Could you just, for the listeners, just give a little intro into who you are and what you're doing?
So I'm Aurelia. I was born in Vienna. I'm Austrian. I spent half of my life in between Vienna and Salzburg, where I gladly met you. And I had a really big urge of moving towards Asia. So I really wanted to move to Asia. I wasn't really sure where to go. So I went and had a couple of interviews in different countries, in Hong Kong, in Japan in the end. But there was a really, after coming to Japan again, like the second time I visited Japan, I was so amazed by Tokyo that I knew I had to move to Tokyo. So it was really, even just taking the bus into the city, I just knew I had to move here.
What was it about that bus ride that made you want to move?
I don't know. It was a very nice summer. So first time I came to Japan was 2017, and I stayed a full month here. So I really got to experience. I got to travel around. I got to see a couple of places, and I was really amazed by just the contrast that Japan has. Like the very, very quiet, very beautiful, very peaceful, but then on the other hand, completely crazy, completely loud and bold, and like all those neons. And it was so fascinating for me that it left a lasting impression. And shortly afterwards, I quit my job with the idea of like moving to Asia. That was my only one idea. And I did spend some time in Southeast Asia that summer, 2018, and also went to New York, went to Toronto, for example, and I had an interview in New York. But then right after New York, I came to Tokyo, and only for I think 3 or 4 days, and I knew I had to come here. So it was, I don't know what it was about the bus ride, but just in already at the airport and then moving, just getting into town, it was so fascinating that I made up my mind, and it was quite a crazy story that now I'm really here. So sometimes I still wake up and I'm like, ah, wow, I'm in Tokyo.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty crazy move, but like awesome. I mean, super brave as well, like, you know, just to be like, yeah, okay, I'm just gonna go to Asia. But it was good that you kind of traveled around a little bit and tried to figure out where you wanted to be. So what are you doing now?
Right now, I'm a visual design lead for Huge. I work for an agency that is based out of Brooklyn. But we have multiple offices around the world. So in Colombia, Bogota, I don't know, Auckland, Singapore has a big APAC office.
Nice. Deciding to pack up your things and go leave your family and your friends, that must have been pretty big decision. Did you decide, like, I mean, you know, you said you traveled around quite a lot, yeah. but did you decide kind of in that moment, or did it really take a bit of time to process?
I think it really was in 2017, or like mid 2017, I felt really stuck in Austria. I felt really like I wasn't really developing anymore. I didn't really have the job opportunities that I needed back then, and that I really wanted to explore more and just grow more, I think. And then my mom suggested to go somewhere on my own, because in general I just felt stuck. So I did plan that Japan trip, and my brother at the time, he was living with me, and he said he's coming. He was so sure. Back then he was quite young also, maybe 18 or 17 or 18 or something, and he said he's gonna come. I was like, no, I need to go on my own. I was like, no, I need to, this has to be about me, this trip. This has to be about me figuring out what to do next. And then in the end, I did go a full month, and he came for 2 weeks. We didn't meet up in Tokyo. And I think just during the trip, it was really, both of us were really fascinated, and both of us all the experiences we had there were just really memorable. And I think during the trip, it started to become really clear for me that I had to go do it now. And after the trip, I started talking with my brother. At the time, we were living together, so I was talking about moving out and starting something. And he was really encouraging, and he was like, yeah, go do it now, yeah, don't wait for anything. I was quite worried. I didn't want to leave him behind, or leave him, he was quite young at the time still, but I think just the trip was really like the turning point when I knew I had to change something in my life. I had to go do something different.
That is good, because I think a lot of people, it takes a long time to recognize when something needs to change.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Obviously, like a few guests that we've had on the show, you know, they've moved countries too. Sometimes it's been because of partners, sometimes mm-hmm. it's been because of jobs. But, you know, it sounds like, you know, you were just drawn to Japan or Asia.
Yeah, but I also needed a moment for myself, I think. I think I was quite caught up in always doing a lot for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then especially also my brother, he was quite, like, as I said, he was quite young at the time. So I had to take care of him a lot. But then also there was a lot of things that I did for other people, which was great, of course. But then I just needed this a little bit of, I think, even isolation. I just needed a little bit of time for myself. Yeah.
So, I mean, if we look at, Vienna and Japan, Austria and Japan, crazy cultural differences, I imagine.
It was quite crazy, yeah. So I think there are some similarities. I think like Germany, Austria, we like tend to be on time, tend to have quite structured in like most things. So I think there are similarities, but there's also quite big differences. And when I came here, I had a big shock, I think. Like, of course, there was like, there's a language barrier, of course. But then it was also in my first job here, it was really, really difficult, because I came from working with you and working in a team, or also a company, or maybe a whole country, where women were also allowed to show their ideas, where I feel like especially in that particular job, I always felt quite valued, or I always felt like my ideas are appreciated, and I'm just like, if I say something, people will listen, or even like the men, or like let's say management, for example, will listen and will have like open discussions. And then afterwards, once I started this first job in Japan, it was so completely different. So I wasn't able to, it was a very small company. So only, I think we were 6 people, all in one room, all in one office, like open office, quite small room. and I was not able to approach the CEO directly, even though he sat like 1.5 meters from me. There's only one person in between, one desk in between. So, but it was so, the hierarchy was so different and so new for me. And also he, every time I would present something, I would present my ideas, my designs, he didn't give me any room to present, number one. And then also he never really liked it ever. So there was always the strong, he was very opinionated and very, he never liked my design, my designs if I showed them. But then if my colleague, my male colleague would show my designs, he would love them. So it was really, it wasn't really about the designs at all. It was so much about me and then also me being just a woman that got him. I was the only girl there. In the beginning when I started, my colleague was also a woman and she had like similar issues. He was really like quite aggressive also towards us. Yeah, it was just really difficult to adapt to this completely different way of working also. All of a sudden, like everything that I built up before, like the 5 years of career I had before, it was just gone in a second, right? Like everything that I already just experienced before, where I was able to grow, it was just immediately wiped out.
I guess your confidence just gets completely knocked because show a design and then your colleague shows exactly the same design, doesn't like yours but likes his, but it's the same design. I mean, that's kind of crazy. Is that something that happens across Japan?
I wasn't completely aware of this issue until I really was in the situation. But I just recently also read there's a 2021 World Economic Forum gender gap ranking, and out of 156 countries, Japan ranks 120. So they are really, really, really far down. And then what was interesting is that Malaysia, Nepal, Ghana, Armenia, Azerbaijan, all of those, Brazil, Russia, Vietnam, Kenya, all of those are above Japan. So Japan is really, really low in this ranking. And it really... Yeah, I wasn't completely aware of that issue, like to be fully honest, before moving here. But after moving here, it was such an eye-opener. And it was, I think I was quite spoiled until then. Of course, in Europe, it's always a topic, right? Like the gender pay gap, always we are aware of it. But since coming here, I see it so much more or less like, really a lot of issues that need addressing in Japan. And I think the most interesting thing is Japan is a rich country, right? So all of those countries I mentioned, like Russia or Malaysia, like none of them are as rich as Japan. But yeah, unfortunately, there's still this gigantic gap just for women. And if you look just into management levels, it's really difficult to spot women in there, yeah. So the whole country is basically led by men.
Yeah. Do you think that's like change on the change, or how have you found living there over the last couple of years?
I do hope so. I think it's on the change, but I think it's also very slow, the change. It's just very difficult. It's quite difficult for women to be heard, I think, be seen and be heard. Yeah.
What are kind of some of the steps that you took to overcome that challenge? So you mentioned, you know, the CEO, you couldn't approach him.
Yeah, I couldn't directly speak to him at all, which was so paradox because we were so few people. And obviously I needed a lot of decisions from him, of course. So, yeah, I think what I learned, I had to be really patient, and I was very frustrated, and I tried to look for a new job or try to find a better opportunity. But then also my visa was, he sponsored my visa. So I was it was really difficult to escape, to just escape him also, to escape that job, to get out of that job. So it took a lot of strength, a lot of getting more into the language, of course, like just studying Japanese to be able to find other opportunities and to also be able to eventually leave and quit that job. Because that's also quite difficult. So if you're in Japan, if you don't have a job as a foreigner, you only have 3 months until you have to leave the country. So there's quite a lot of pressure as well. So you can't just like stay and then take time to find a new job. And then obviously as a, yeah, it's very difficult if you're not fluent in Japanese.
Yeah, of course. Are you fluent now?
No. No. But I take weekly classes and I'm really trying, yeah. But it's very difficult, of course, yeah.
Yeah, I bet. Is it based on tone as well, like Mandarin and okay.
No, it's not based on tone, thankfully. So it's very easy for Japanese to understand me. Yeah. So, but it's still lots of honorific forms and lots of, that's most difficult, I think, yeah.
So, I mean, given the fact that you, you know, I guess had a lot of your confidence knocked, mm-hmm. what made you continue and want to stay there? I think in some cases, if that happened, like your first experience being that kind of intense, a lot of people would just be like, I need to go back to safety almost, you know? Going to need to go back to what I know. What made you stay and stick it out?
I didn't want to give up on Japan yet. I wasn't ready to give up on coming here and moving to Tokyo just because of this one boss, right? So I was it was difficult, and there were like times that I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't know how to continue it just because it was And then I think then it only started to become a little bit more difficult because then the pandemic hit, and pretty much so in the beginning of 2020, my grandfather passed away, and I was asking my former boss if I can go to the funeral, and he said no. So that was a moment when I knew I had to leave. Like there was no other option. I was like, I'm gonna quit right away, because there's like that really crossed the line. That was
it's not really acceptable, is it?
Yeah. And then I did not have a next job, but I did quit because I was like, something is gonna come up, or like some other, like there's gonna be a better option for me out there. And so I did end up going to the funeral. Thankfully, I was able to go, and then later I found a new job.
And is that where you are now?
No, that's not where I am now. I was working for a space startup. Space startup, yeah. Yes.
Cool.
also for a year roughly. I think that was also really interesting. I think I just learned a lot. I was so different. Again, there was a Japanese company, a much bigger company. So I think roughly 100 people. So it was totally different. It was a different experience. It was a lot more international too. Yeah, but I saw similar patterns that also it's really difficult as a woman in, like, of course the space startup was also male dominated. There was like all the engineers, all the management was completely male dominated, Japanese, of course, yeah.
Do you think not only being female but being like white and from Europe played a role in that? I mean, I hate to kind of ask it, but you know, I kind of feel like it needs to be addressed.
I think as like any kind of foreigner in Japan, there like as in every country, it's like more difficult to get proper housing, for example. It's quite difficult to find a job. So I think there are, of course, as for everyone who moves abroad or who is somewhere else than their own home country, there are difficulties. I think also those men were also not used to a woman like speaking up, right? And I always been able to speak up for like either myself or also other people, and also was able to share my ideas, my designs, my any like concepts
thoughts,
or whatever. Thoughts, opinions. And so I think I also shocked them, right? I think that's also one, like that's maybe to answer the question you had earlier. I think I also had to reduce myself a little bit. I had to not be too bold, right? Because I just learned that if I am very bold, then I will get a quite strict reaction, or quite a surprise reaction sometimes. Yeah,
I guess that's, you know, that initial understanding of the culture and having to adapt slightly. It sounds awful, you know, because you shouldn't need to adapt yourself so much. You know, they've hired you for a reason. But I do remember once going to a meeting in China, and it was like a first meeting, and I was looking at them in their eye. And that's like, you should not do that ever. Like if you know someone well, but like if you don't know them and it's a first business meeting, don't make eye contact with them.
Which
for me blew my mind, because I was like, surely you need to make it kind of personable, and you know.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of like just unspoken rules, and it's, unless you're in the situation, you won't know. So I think there was a lot of learning for me as well. But in the end, what I learned is that like there's no reason why I have to be like more silent or more adapted. So I think the baseline for me is, I love Japan, I think Japan is great, but I don't have to be Japanese, or I don't have to fit right in. I can be myself. I can be myself here, even if it was like really difficult in the beginning, or if I had to figure a couple of things out, or I had to learn a lot of things the hard way. But I realized that there's no reason that I need to tone down, or I need to be more silent.
That's what we should be more like, you know. Yeah, just being ourselves, our authentic selves. Is there anything that you would have done differently, or that you kind of regret on that journey?
I don't think so. I think I was able to make a lot of good friends on the way, and also people that supported me and people that were here for me. I think the biggest challenge was when the pandemic hit, like just being here in Japan. That was so much more difficult than the difficulties I faced with the job before. Just because I got really afraid that I couldn't go home. Like not so afraid about myself, but just afraid that my family is okay, is gonna be okay. And I think just in the very beginning of the pandemic, it wasn't really, no one really knew how bad it was, or like how deadly it was. And then there was this really big wave in Italy. And then also the media obviously reporting about all those doctors dying and all those, like, it becoming really bad. So that was when I got extremely worried, because both my parents are doctors, and, like, I started to have, like, be just super worried about my family back home. They were fine, they're okay, but it put me into real isolation, because I knew I can't go home even if something happened, or even if I, like, there was just no flights, there was no way to go back to Europe or to Austria in particular. So I think that took me really long. I think that the whole 2 years afterwards now, it took me quite long to get over this initial, I think, just anxiety, or this initial fear I had for them. And I think that taught me a lot of lessons, also a lot of lessons of just being on my own. And because before I never really felt like Japan is far away, right? It was still, I still had my siblings come visit, I still had friends come visit, and it always felt quite accessible, or just like one flight away. But once that was gone, it was quite difficult, because I just had to, I knew there was this big distance and I couldn't do anything about it. So I had to really accept that and really figure everything out on my own and like within really, really far away.
Yeah, I mean that's huge, and yeah, it's like a common theme with people, you know, that have moved away, but the pandemic is literally like, yeah, cutting you off completely. You're isolated,
yeah.
You're there, you sure we have Zoom and all that, but
yeah,
when someone takes something away, properly away,
yeah,
it's that's really difficult to get your head around. Like obviously when you go to somewhere where you don't speak the language, it's quite difficult, I guess, if you have no friends there initially, to build up a friend network. How did that kind of go for you?
That was quite easy. I immediately, from the first job, I think that was a great thing about that first difficult job, was that I had a couple of colleagues that were amazing.
Okay.
And that were just like nice people. And then all of us were in this crazy situation together. So it was quite nice because we could also support ourselves, like the others. Like definitely me and my female colleague had the biggest issues with the boss, but he was in general not a good person to anyone around. So I think we were somehow in it together. So I think that's also why I managed to stick around the full year, is that my colleagues were great and my colleagues also supported me and they were just there. And then also I was able to just make friends and like find other people, yeah. But I think with the pandemic, there's also a lot of people leaving Japan. And I think there, in general, there was quite a big exodus. So I think that's the first time in, I think the last 2 years, the first time in more than 2 decades that Tokyo actually, the population declined. So a lot of foreigners were leaving Tokyo, but then also a lot of people were moving out of the city into more rural areas.
Right, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that makes sense. I think a lot of people in Europe are also kind of doing that. I think the price of land in like rural areas went up loads because people just wanted to get out of the city. During a pandemic, if you have kids and a family living in a small inner city, is tougher, I
guess.
Really
difficult. But I think it just that time made me really aware of that it's great to be living abroad, right? So I get all these experiences, I have all those opportunities also, and I get to craft maybe another version of myself. I get to like maybe just grow so much. But then there's also of course a side where I miss out, right? I miss out on being with my, I'm sure you know it, and I'm sure you know the feeling. I miss out on being with my family, with my friends back home, of course. So that made me just painfully aware of what I'm also giving up for, like living this dream or living being here.
Of course, yeah. I mean, when you said before with, you know, your colleagues, there's always a positive from every kind of negative situation,
yeah,
depending on which kind of lens you look through, right? And also your friends and your family have a really cool place to visit, so
yeah. That's true, yeah. And the first summer I lived here, my brother, he stayed with me for 2 full months. So it was very funny. I lived in this tiny, tiny apartment. It was so small. It was, I think, 23 square meters. And he stayed with me the whole summer. And it was such a nice, it was really nice to have him over and to also have him experience more of Tokyo. And because like we came here together the first time. And then it was just really good to also have my siblings here and share the magic of Tokyo with them.
I guess that's quite a shock as well, the size of the apartments, because in Austria, they're much bigger. In 20 square meters, did you also have a kitchen?
Yes, I had a kitchen in the hallway. It was so tiny. It was really, really small, yeah. I think that was also a takeaway for me from living in a very small place, meant that I couldn't have many possessions, right? So I was very, very limited, and I also adapted a super minimalistic lifestyle. Not necessarily because I chose to, but because I was
upon you.
Forced to, yeah. But I think it's great, and I also realized I don't need much stuff. And I think that was a big lesson here as well, that I could be happy with the bare minimum, and I didn't need like anything really.
There's a lot of people that say, you know, if you've got too much choice, then it actually makes you more unhappy because it creates confusion. It's like, you know, well, you're always looking for the next thing. And I think it's like, it was Zuckerberg and Steve Jobs and stuff always wore like the same thing because it eliminated that choice. I guess your mum probably has all of the rest of your stuff stored somewhere. Or did you get rid of it?
I left some stuff with my parents, yes, but I sold most of my stuff, yeah. And in the beginning, I was like, should I really sell this piece of furniture? Should I really give this away? But then once I started also giving away the things that I liked a lot, it was so freeing. It really freed me from, it was such a good experience when I just was able to move here with one single luggage. I think that was just, I could really start from scratch, And in the beginning, I didn't even have any cutlery. I only had, I think for the first, almost the first year, I had one knife and just chopsticks. That was it. That was it. Wow. And it was enough. It was...
But easy, right? Because then you don't have easy. A whole lot of stuff to wash up.
Yeah, I think it was a good lesson, and it also... now I live with my partner and we have a bigger apartment, but it's still really small. So it's sometimes challenging because you need to, there's no way you can buy anything. But I think that's also freeing or humbling. If you can't like purchase much, then you just, you value experiences more. You value, small, simple stuff more. So I think that's very nice. Yeah,
100%. I had a dare from someone. She was the first guest on series two, and she told me not to buy anything. And actually, over Christmas and that, I started getting into Marie Kondo and like folding techniques and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when she told me like I couldn't buy anything, I realized how much I was spending. And I've really tried to cut back on buying stuff now, because you don't need half the stuff that you buy. You think you do in that moment. It's like, oh, you know, my life would be so much easier. But just cutting it out is so much better. And with this whole folding technique and stuff, actually organizing your life, you see how much stuff that you have. And you also, because it's so organized, you actually, I don't use as much as I thought I would. So I use like maybe
the same
five t-shirts. Use the same things over and over again. So now I'm at that point where I'm like, actually, I'm just going to get rid of it. And chatting to you now is kind of inspiring me to be a bit more like that.
Yeah, I think it's really freeing. I think there's a lot of the clutter also transforms into mental clutter in a way. And it just blocks you a little bit. So I think, being able to live a more minimalistic lifestyle where you don't need to like purchase a lot, you need to go out, you also realize that it does make you happy a little bit. Of course, there is retail therapy, but it doesn't last long, right? I always love this concept in Japan that they value not just animals and nature and humans, but also just value things as such. So I quite like that.
So you mentioned earlier how you felt during the pandemic. Has that kind of taught you anything?
What I learned, I think, in the three years, what is the biggest takeaway for me is that, like, the same way, like, if you break your collarbone, you need time to heal it, right? So I think it's also with those kind of experiences or with, like, also negatives or, like, just... I think like the common fear most people had with the pandemic in particular now, it doesn't really matter if someone was in Japan or like anywhere else in the world. I think it also needs time like to be able to heal it or to be able to recover from it. So I think it's like, I think all of us are still in this period of recovery in a way. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. It's kind of like just what I think. It was like figuring out what the hell is happening during the pandemic, like at the start, okay, it's only short, it's going to, and then you know, our lives have completely changed. So like going out into crowds again, actually traveling again, meeting up with people, and I don't know, silly things like sharing food or sharing a drink or something like that, you know, it's completely different now. You know, people are really cautious. So yeah, I think that's a really important message. That,
but it's also extremely nice to be able to see family again, for example, to be able to see those people that we were longing to see for like for 2 years. Yeah, it feels amazing to also be able to appreciate the really small things again, going back to the office, like meeting people, like having those regular interactions. And I think that's also something that I would want to incorporate into the DARE for you.
Okay.
So
okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Just one last thing. Is there any advice that you'd want to leave the listeners with today?
What I learned is like something I mentioned to you earlier already. So if the plan doesn't work out, change the plan, but never change the goal. So I think just stick to it. Like everyone's going to fail until they reach their goals, but just do it. Yeah, just continue and over and over.
I got little goosebumps as you said that, because I was like, yeah, it's powerful, you know. I think just don't lose sight of, you know, what you've set out to do, even though times are tough, because you always come out stronger on the other side, most of the time.
Yeah.
All right, so you want to incorporate
some, yes.
Yeah.
So I think in Japan, it's quite common to go to a restaurant on your own, to go to a bar on your own, for example, and just talk to strangers. So I think that's something like you can choose, of course, where you would want to do it. But I think like just going out, talking to stranger, talking to someone who you've never met before, I think that is really humbling or a good exercise.
Yeah.
Okay. Or like even just dining out on your own, for example, or like going somewhere you've never been on your own, and then contacting, if you can, contacting someone.
Yeah, okay, cool. I can do that, going out and talking to a stranger, for sure. That's yeah, that's nice. And I think probably appreciated in these times as well. Now that travel is starting to open and people are maybe, you know, wanting to meet others again, like travelers or something like that, it's going to be difficult. So if someone reaches out, that would be nice.
Sometimes it's even just a neighbor you see every now and then, you never talk to them, right? It's like some of those people are like strangers, even though you see them every now and then. But I think it's just like starting that conversation is just something that is good for you and good for them.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks so much, Aurelia, for being on the podcast. Yeah, loved having you and to hear your experiences, to share that with everyone else.
No, thank you so much for having me. I think what you built already with this community is amazing. Please continue.
Thanks so much, and thanks for listening and sharing with others. Super important, I think. So I've just been given the DARE by Aurelia, and I'm really thinking how tough this is going to be to film. Well, to film and also audio record, because I can't just walk up to someone and just record them. That's illegal. But also, I need to get their permission. And so if I tell them, can I record them, they'll probably be like, who is this girl and what does she want from me? So that would be a bit awkward. And also I'm thinking about where to do it, because I have a feeling like people are just not as open, I think, here. But maybe that's just me being really closed-minded myself. I've been thinking about this a bit more, and actually I'm quite nervous about it, because I mean, after COVID times, it's just not so normal. I mean, and I know that's the point of the DARE. But, you know, people are not so open to getting close to you. So, like, standing 2 meters and just hovering and going, hey, how are you? You know, just feels really so much more awkward than it used to. I'm actually quite anxious about it, and I really don't know where to do it. I mean, you know, I do often go and talk to people at work, for example. So this week I've actually spoken to 3 people. I've stopped them in the hallway because they're new, and I've introduced myself and had a nice chat. Does that count? Can I pass the test? Can I leave it there? I'm just trying to let myself off the hook. This is more difficult than I expected. Okay. All right. I've got to get myself together. I am going out tonight into town and I'm going out for dinner. So it's not going to be a big deal just to say hello to someone, I don't know, in the waiting area or at the bar and ask them how their weekend was. I'm going to do that. So that wasn't all bad. I mean, I didn't really have a big conversation, but, you know, I just had a little chat about the weekend and how they were and if they were from here and they just started a new job. So, yeah. Does that pass? I hope so. It's really interesting how different I feel now after COVID, because I really wouldn't have thought twice about this. And I'm quite a social person, but I don't know, I feel more awkward because I was supposed to record it, but that's just weird. And I don't have a video for it because obviously I couldn't video them. So yeah, I don't know. I might try it again. I might make this like a regular occurrence, like just to go and talk to people randomly and open my horizons a bit more outside of my network. Because, you know, that's the beauty of like going traveling and stuff like that, because you meet people all the time. And perhaps I've just stopped meeting people where I live because, yeah, I'm closed off to the people that I know. So this is a really, really good dare. It's just one thing I can do every day, like, or every week. I could say, right, the community, me and the community, every week we will go and talk to someone different in a different location, just to see what comes out. You never know who you'll meet. That's pretty cool. I like that, and I'm going to continue that. If you want to check out how the dare went down, there's a reel on Instagram for every single one of them. Follow us at _shedares and let me know if you decide to do any of them with me. I'd love to see what you get up to.